So it's like, thank you, everyone. I mean, it's really worth saying that it's hard enough at any point to talk about your practice and put things into words, but especially it's hard to talk about things before they've taken place. Is that better? Oh. We can get a reverb. Should we take this one out of the equation? See what happens. Is that better?
No, it's because you're too close to the speakers. Mm. I point the mic that way.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
Can you twist that? We'll get it.
How's this? Is that better? Okay, we'll just begin. It's worth reiterating that it's hard enough to talk about your work at any moment, but particularly before it's happened, and probably the most hard is when it's in process, when you're trying to figure out ideas and processes. So thank you, everyone, just trying to figure that out publicly. It's a very hard thing to do. And I got quite a hard job in terms of thinking on my feet about how to kind of connect some of those things, and also to think about it in relation to the context of the show. One of the things that I think for me was so striking listening to all of you talk was just this very basic kind of condition of collaboration in your work, and the condition of whether it's through the interviews, through the open call, like collaboration seemed to be essential to the way you were trying to work through certain ideas. So I suppose I want to start with a very basic question to each of you, is like, how did you arrive at collaboration? Has that been something that has always been a necessary condition, or is it something that you found through a kind of lack in your limitations as an artist or a thinker, or whatever that may be? Like, what is it about the collaboration that allows you to work in a different way? Who's going to begin?
So, is this working?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah? Oh, yeah. It was you.
The MC causing problems with the mic. He's like.
I think for me, I've led groups in the past on a long-term basis and a shorter-term basis. I led a group called the Empath Group for nearly 3 years. And then short-term things like workshops and stuff. So a lot of my work is based in collaborative processes anyway. But particularly for this project, I guess it's this thing of me trying to work out just quite simply where my community is. And I've spoken to so many people individually and privately who seem to be thinking the same things as me, experiencing the same personal day-to-day things as me, working in the art world alongside me, next to me, and we're just talking about it like on these one-on-one things. And I think for us it's been... it's just spoken so much to how important that is, and the second I put everyone in touch, we were like, right, yeah, so we're going to meet every month, right? I don't think anybody even put it forward. It was just, we all just assumed it because it is so necessary for us. So, yeah, for me, it's just, that's a large part of the content. It's not just the form, yeah.
Yeah, I guess... a lot of my practice is me being on my own, and I enjoy that mostly. But actually, I guess in terms of collaboration, I guess a lot of it is about like, how do you let things out? How do you kind of like let things out and let things grow and hold each other's ideas and fears and the situations that come up through the work? And you, Leah said that was talking about care being anti-capitalist, and I can't help but think of like care and friendship, and like, you know, like Elijah and I and Jamila have known each other for many, many years from school. You guys talking about where you met and the conditions and how, as much, I guess, as artists, as friendships grow, that those kind of bonds are also important to have these kind of like artistic friendships, to give you a solid base for any kind of material work, really.
Yeah, I guess I've worked, I work individually as an artist, and I also work with the collective creativity that I'm a part of. And then I've worked in various forms collectively, and I guess for me it's also just kind of the conditions, like as a queer, trans artist of colour, the community, the pool is quite small, and so often we're having to be in competition with each other for work even and opportunities. So we're kind of forced into having to be in some form of community, whether that's supportive, you know, yeah, how we choose to kind of use that situation. And I think that's kind of where a lot of it has been born from. It's like, yeah, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the fact that we have to go for the same position. What does that mean? What does that do to our friendships and our community? And then I guess it's just coming from, I guess, I don't know, maybe it's just a cultural background of always being socialized in community, and that being something that I'm just familiar with and used to, and that's that in that way. But in terms of working collectively, I think for me it's just, it's provided a space that we can hold each other, like this holding space, this network, and something to what you just said about, you know, yeah, sharing resources and sharing that kind of knowledge. But I think there are, you know, there are tensions, and this is when I come back to the kitchen table conversation. There's a lot, I've been in a lot of activist spaces where we've had to be in the sat at the table with each other and we haven't agreed. But I think that's a really productive kind of tension. So for me, collectivity is kind of many different things.
I mean, in the most basic form, like the first kind of like collaborative things I would have done is Pirate Radio, and I would have shared a show with like another DJ, so you don't have to buy all the same records, and because you can't afford to buy everything. This is like when people bought music, and then like the collaborative performances, like the picture I showed with Skepta and things like that, I'm used to playing with maybe like one other DJ and then other MCs and all that kind of stuff, and it's not possible for me to do anything without, you know, the one or the other. And then, you know, the promoters of the music that I do are usually artists too, so you have this kind of thing where, like, yeah, and I've become that too. I've put on shows and then DJed at my own show, and then, do you know what I mean, like I'm like getting the artists in, and they're like, oh, it's like 5 minutes to my set and I'm gonna play, and then like the things, the boundaries between each practice isn't as defined. So I guess that it's like all of everyone here today has been like, we're like interdisciplinary, and like, yeah, that's like everyone everyone is kind of like that. Everyone is like, I rarely meet anyone these days that works in like one art form, and like the most art forms you need someone else to do something.
I think it's really interesting, actually, within the context of Wising, because I mean, I imagine, you know, conventionally the artist residency is the place where the single artist comes and they think and they produce the work, and that's, you know, that's the form of the residency. I mean, there was, you were talking, John, about the fact that the submission process has changed. I imagine, you know, being able to, as Raju, you talked about, I think, a certain like institutional practice at a certain moment, like how somewhere like Wising can accommodate collaborative ways of working and accommodate polyphony. You know, I mean, it's all very well to say, okay, polyphony is our theme, we're going to deal with polyphony, but like, how does that work in real terms of like practice of people coming here, of being hospitable? You know, that's, it's a whole different way of working institutionally as well as personally for all the artists.
Yeah, I mean, we've really been rethinking what artists need when it comes to residencies, and there are kind of various things going on, various things at play. There's, I said generally, maybe a shrinking of the studio. So maybe with the exception of Phoebe and Jamila, who've been kind of making making objects. A lot of artists come for the residencies and really just need like desk space to work. But so that's kind of happening. But then at the same time, there are a lot of collaborations which are kind of separated geographically. So rather than having kind of two or three people who can meet up in the same city, which kind of, as Raju's made clear in their work, is something that's becoming more difficult by itself, you're also having this new problem that's kind of enabled or created by ease of communication, where collaborations exist kind of like nationwide or kind of across kind of seas and continents. And that's something we've been kind of very keen to support, to just give space for groups to come together.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose what I'm driving at, and something that also came across in all of your presentations, was Leah, was it you who brought up the personal as the political mantra? So this kind of absolutely necessary blurring of one's actual conditions of life, of how we work, who we speak to, on what terms, and then the work gets produced. I mean, Raju, you talked about it when you did this residency, as actually using that moment to figure out, okay, where the hell, like, what are all the bits that are going, and the fact that no longer could one just present work about something, rather it needs to be like, we need to understand it as who we are, the practice that gets produced and the practice gets made. So I suppose if I could kind of veer towards a question, I guess it would be like, within art world spaces, whether that's residencies, galleries, institutions, very formalized ways of working, like, how does one, what are the mechanisms that one can use to like bring that very real personal situation into that? Like, how can we find ways to sort of break those open? Or like, I mean, are you finding that institutions like Wising, I know you're also involved in the showroom, for example, are they becoming more accommodating? Is it a question of like, where are we with that? Like,
how long have you got? I think that's the problem. You know, that is the problem for me. And I guess that's why I wanted to focus on kind of informal knowledges and informal ways and processes of producing knowledge, because I even feel like, even when institutions get me in knowing that that's my practice and that's how I work and this is my background and that's what they're attracted to, they still, there is this other sense of assimilation, to like assimilate into their way of doing things, or the structure, or how can we change their structure by doing things our way, but then not allowing that to take place. So I think that for me is this ongoing struggle, and I think that comes down to funding and how they're managing to finance what's happening in those institutions. It doesn't allow them to then, they're bound by that funding, and I think that's the difference between self-organizing and institutions, is that, you know, when you're self-organizing, you make your own rules up. So for me, it's been a challenge. But what was your question exactly? How do you bring that in? I mean,
is it a fight worth having? Or, I mean, you talked about Phoebe. You talked about like anti-assimilation. You know, we can also talk about kind of separationist tendencies. There's a whole area of theory around separationists. Like, is it better to be separate, actually, whether that's as women, questions of gender, question of color, or like, how do you? Is it better to assimilate or anti-assimilate? Like, where's the fight in terms of institutions?
I don't know. I guess people who haven't historically been given any space or even being able to take space easily, have always found a way of operating within these systems. To give an example of my experience at Wising, I became at home in the farmhouse. I became at home in the places that I was able to take over. In those places, I did what I wanted. In terms of interactions with all the staff here, like, there are moments when the conversations are in a car or like something like that, and we're two people in a car. There are times when the conversations are in a building, and those parameters shift. So I don't know if you can think about it so absolutist in a sense, but more talking to each other about how we find ways of dealing with those boundaries so that we don't like get hurt more, I guess, you know, and you know, Elijah was talking about Raju's map and things like that. It's just like, if I'd seen that, I wouldn't have had my heart broken so many times. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And or more than that. Yeah, you come. So like, maybe it's not just like a, what will the building look like? Maybe it will just look like this, you know? But like, how do we work inside the building or something? I don't know.
And maybe Elijah, having like been involved in this process with the Arts Council, maybe you want to add in something in terms of a very kind of formalized process that you're part of, but you spoke about it very positively.
This scheme is called Changemakers. The resistance to change have like a kind of license to just say, oh, let's do this, and people not want to, do you mean not say no for this 18 months. And in organization, I've got like a limited time of being able to do it, and I've been able to push buttons and just pass, like in Grime, pass the mic to someone else in the situation. So a lot of the time at Lighthouse, I'll invite people in that are not like speakers to speak, or not used to leading workshops to lead workshops, and then that changes the dialogue in the room, and they just get to listen to it rather than there being like a formal consultation process of who is allowed to speak or who is, you know, an artist or something. And I feel like one thing that was good for me is like what I did for a long time I wasn't being called an artist, and it just allowed all this kind of freedom. I wasn't like being called a visual artist or a DJ or something like that. It wasn't any formality of my actual role. So it just allowed that, okay, you can just listen to this person, this person. I'm not like bound by any rules myself. So I can actually preach that. I'm like, I've got this far without having I don't listen to these people because they're not directors, or they haven't shown at a gallery before, because I didn't know what those spaces were. All I can do is just judge on what I like and what I think is good, and which is kind of what we should be doing, right? So maybe, I don't know.
I want to shift the conversation a little bit, actually, to think about the exhibition in a certain way. I mean, I think one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot recently is the kind of the inadequacy of the exhibition. not this exhibition, exhibitions in general, like the inadequacy of the exhibition format. You know, this moment where you have to crystallize things when the opening comes, you can't change it anymore. That's the statement that you're making either as a curator or as an artist or an institution. And the fact that it is bound by certain formats, images, objects, texts. I think listening to everyone speak today kind of reinforced that view, that the certain inadequacy of the exhibition format to mediate the types of practices that you're all engaged with, and I think that artists are increasingly engaged with collaborative, research, discursive, kitchen table based practices. So I suppose to lead this all to a question would be, where do you stand on the types of formats that you're being asked to make work in and through, and are those adequate, sufficient? Elijah, you talked about the kind of luxury of to say, okay, I'm not this person, I can work in all these different ways, but that's not always the case. So I suppose I want to ask a little bit about the formats in which you're being asked to make work, and even if you could like reflect on certain things, reflect on certain moments where that could have worked or didn't work.
I guess in terms of what is asked of you, I don't know if much like changes that much in terms of like a gallery situation or like an art institution situation. But I think in terms of ways in which it's possible for us to redefine like what we want a show to look like, I feel like there's like a lot more possibility. Even thinking about kind of like, I don't know, an idea of like time being racist and time being sexist or ableist, and like, I mean, things in my practice, like if ever I make something, it can always change unless it's literally not in my hands anymore. If someone buys a video, it's always still available online. Like they can only, I see like that kind of thing as patronage and support. I don't see it as like ownership necessarily, even if they have like a flop, like a USB or something like that. I like when things like keep moving. So like in Jamila's practice, in lots of her performances, she'll ask different people to collaborate on music. There have been times when like Elijah's sent me, I've asked Elijah to do a reading of a poem that Jamila has sent me to make her something. Then I find out Jamila's showing like a new work with the music or messed up by someone else. And you know, like these things, us being open to new possibilities, also like new ways of working. Like I worked in clubs for years and was always too shy to make music. Had I been involved in something like what Elijah's doing, I would have been really on it. But so I think that like just keeping things moving, like trying to provide the literal conditions for people to like, you know, fulfill their wildest imagination. And also like, maybe this relates to you talking about like not just being black or however you described it, but like, what do we actually want to make? Like, what color is it? What shape is it? Does it have a shape? Like, you know, like all the amazing things that we could possibly like create for someone to experience. Like, what is that actually going to be? Rather than, as well as thinking about anti-assimilation and the activism that it holds as well.
Sorry.
I don't want to hog
it. Yeah, I guess for me it's like, like Elijah was saying, everyone's interdisciplinary. I think for me, the work I make, the form it takes depends on what it's about. Like I just made a VR game, which is the thing that's behind the front desk. I haven't done that before. Which, you know, a lot of that's to do with access, so it's downloadable as an app, so anyone in the world can have it as long as you've got a phone. And then... yeah, and I think, like Phoebe was saying, my work sometimes can be something that's, you know, ever-changing. Like when I was leading the Empath group, a lot of people were asking me, so then are you going to make work with it? And it's like, no, that is the work. We meet once a month, that's the work. And I was really, really influenced, actually, by a group of artists called Grupa Spomenik, which is Serbian for Memorial Group. So they're a group of people, artists and academics and writers, all from countries in the former Yugoslavia, who decided, in response to a call from the city of Belgrade, to like a really rare moment where they called for a memorial for the war that broke down Yugoslavia, they proposed, we will be the memorial. and we will meet as a group to discuss genocide regularly. And of course it wasn't accepted because they wanted a sculpture, because then it's over and done with and you can just be like, yep, don't have to feel guilty. It's there. We put, you know, however much money into this. But they decided to make the work anyway, so they meet and they talk about genocide, and they accept you can that's something you can never ever understand, but the attempt at it is worth it. And I think for me that's massively influenced my practice, that way of thinking, like, you can't, I don't want to come to conclusions. I don't want to make decisions between things necessarily. But the attempt at it is definitely worth it, and the talking about it and the process of it. Having said that, I think sometimes it can actually be really good and really satisfying to make something that is finished. I just finished making a film work, and it's like, it's there. And actually, I don't have to put any more labour into it because it's done. Because sometimes you do end up putting all your energy into these things that are really important to you. But then, yeah, I guess particularly from my position being ill, I just can't do it all the time. And sometimes I do need to reassess, like, how much energy do I have for this? But
yeah, I guess I come to arts practice in a slightly maybe different route, or because I, like I said, I was self-organizing, so a lot of the time we had the capacity to do whatever we wanted to do and have that freedom to make whatever we wanted to make. When that kind of those spaces started to shut down and I started to come more and more into institutional spaces, I've kind of, there has been this resistance, so, oh, why am I being asked to, like, put something in a room? And I think I've never really worked like that, and I've worked in performance, so that is a different form as well that allows you to kind of interrupt and disturb those kind of logics. But then kind of moving away from that now, it's interesting because, yeah, when John asked me to submit what I was working on, I was like, it's a work in progress, it's not ready, it's not right, you know. So, and then hearing this feedback about the tablecloth as well, like, yeah, this thing of making something, like, I'm glad I did it now, even though at the time I was like, I'm just going to put something that's a work in progress. But yeah, this question, I think, is about what is the work? And for me, it's like, often it's the process and not the tangible kind of outcome of it. And I don't always like to document everything that I'm doing either.
I think one of the word that I keep coming back to is practice, which I think kind of is so important to think about. Now, the practice that all of you are doing, or and also the institution's doing, like, that's the work. Like, the as I say, the kind of choices that are made, the people that you're talking to, the processes you're going to, the practice is the work. And it's not that you know, Stuart Hall has this wonderful phrase where he talks about moments of arbitrary closure, where things are, like, presented. And that would be, like, the exhibition format, right, where you have this moment of arbitrary closure, and then it opens up, and it reforms, and it re-goes in something completely different. But the practice, the reading, the writing, the talking, that's where the work is. That's where the work's situated.
I would say also that there's, like, possibility, which I get the impression of, like, is what the sort of, like, ideas were behind the new sort of style of residencies at Wising, is that, like, an institution could have a practice, right? That is possible for, yeah, so that rather than coming together and you're like, there's a rock and you're like, all like, ah, it's like you're both a bit like that, you know? You've both been actually trying to do work, and where that sits together, like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to add something to that, John, or? As the institution.
Yeah, I mean, particularly with regard to the idea of exhibitions being like a limited form, or what was the phrase used? Exhibitions as the inadequacy,
yeah,
of exhibitions. I mean, I'd say that kind of as an institution, there's certainly a we have a practice, or there is a way we try to do things, and you end up with a very unconventional program, and then with an exhibition like this, it's an opportunity to kind of present 12 months of a very unconventional program in a very conventional form, and that, you know, there are opportunities in there. There are things you can do that are interesting. There are not. It's great that you can revisit conversations, or, you know, kind of bring something from February into conversation with something from November, but there are obviously kind of limitations, and it's in this exhibition there are lots of references to things that have happened, and it's that will have different meanings depending on whether you experienced it or not. And it can be a bit like looking at a group photograph and saying like, oh, here's Women's Beat League, they did this amazing retreat that was just for eight people, and you can kind of talk about it, and you can kind of talk about what came from that, and it's there is a limitation, and it's kind of and just one other thought is that kind of in a sort of a very standard kind of art kind of structure or art career, exhibitions are kind of always seen as the prize, and while practices get more varied, more interdisciplinary, I think it's really important to remember that there might be a trap in that those practices could just end up being left in kind of education programs or performance programs, and that I think it's important to if the exhibition format doesn't work for you, then it can be changed, and I think that's important.
Yeah, and I'm an exhibition curator, so don't get me wrong, I love exhibitions. and I love the finished thing, I love that moment where you can step back and say, that's done, that's it, tick the box. But I think it's also incredibly apparent that we need to constantly challenge it, reinvent it, rethink it, rework it, all these sorts of things. Yeah.
Because I forgot to mention the exhibition at the showroom at the moment kind of tries to disturb that logic of the exhibition space, and so there's a schedule to the show and different things happen. I don't want to give it away, but people should go and check that out. It's called it's something about the conversation. Oh, I've forgotten the title. No, it's terrible. There's something in the conversation that's more interesting than the finality of a title. Yeah. Long one. Which
you like talk about exhibitions, like how musicians talk about albums, and it's like there's a benefit to doing albums and putting them out and doing a traditional kind of touring cycle, and in between that there's all these other kind of exciting things that happen. So sometimes you like a person's record, like Solange or something, but then in between she just did some like massive like installation thing that looks like really interesting, and that's like, for me, like I might interact with the album once, like going to an exhibition, but then the installation is the thing that blows your head off. Do you know what I mean? All the things that you do in between to get to the album. Do you know what I'm saying? I think like if we as artists, whatever, are looking at exhibitions like that, it's like, okay, we still do them. Like if you need to, and then everything else in between is kind of like maybe where the party's happening. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also taking that idea of polyphony also in terms of the formats, right, and the registers that things happen. So they happen at these very different registers, whether it's the album, the live performance, the exhibition, the kitchen table conversation. It's that type of polyphony as well in terms of the actual voices that are speaking.
You know what? It's like when I look at artists' websites and I see like their work, and it'll be like by the year, I'm like, oh man, how do I even list the things that I've done? In the same way, I feel like kind of like imposter syndrome. I do the same like amount of work probably, but then I can't list it in the same way because it's like not next to an organization or something. It's like if you did a show like underneath a Chinese restaurant and then I put like a year next to it, it doesn't really look legit in the same way that if it's that wising and it's happening, and do you know what I mean?
Rashida Arain had this, like, I was doing this book where I was trying to inventorize a lot of his work, and you come across, I'd say, Rashid, what's the date of this? And he was like, well, it's 1975 to 2015. I'm like, what? He's like, well, I first had the idea in 1971. Like, I collected some of the material. I didn't think to do anything in 1975, and then I revisited it in 2013, and it's that kind of thing. But it also makes you realize how absurd like giving a date to a piece of art is, because of course it's like its genealogy goes back so many different ways and places. maybe there's some questions or comments.
I didn't actually have a question to the last thing about space and the work and stuff. And I guess, like I'm a dancer, trained in dance, I went to dance school, and I've ended up working in a lot of visual art spaces. And so how my work exists in the space is really informed by the space. And as much as I hear a lot of talk about how spaces can change and ideas can change, one of the constant conversations I'm having with dancers and performers, like me and Jamila talk about it all the time, is how these spaces cannot hold our work. And it really does change the work. Like I believe part of, definitely not all, but part of the reason that I started making moving images and film was to also manage that and want to have conversations or want to be part of these conversations. But actually, if my work's down the theatre and only a certain type of person comes, or I put it in a rave where, like, I've also practiced and a lot of my work comes from, then I don't get access to this type of conversation and this type of money. So I guess, like, when you're thinking about, you know, I guess it's a comment and a question, but it's like how does the space change enough to disrupt the hierarchy of art? And I think I really resonate with a lot of what you're saying, because I've always felt like bodies really struggle with that and sound really struggle with that. Like going, institutions are so interested in a lot of what they might call like London music or black sonic art or grime, but they don't have the sound systems to hold it. They just cannot produce the sound, and they don't invest in the same level of rigor that they put in installing a physical piece of work. And I feel that way about how my body is placed in the spaces. I'd be interested how what people think about that. It is a question.
I'm not sure I need to think about that for a moment. But does anyone else have a comment?
That's what your comment is, what's keeping me like from not making more and like trying to, like I say, like trying to stay in the arts profession, because I understand those things and I want people like you in the space doing things. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm kind of torn because I've seen so much of this world and I want to just do my own thing, but at the same time, if I just leave it and just focus on myself, then there's all this opportunity that I can't, like, I mean, give to you. I'm kind of like, oh shit. You said that as well, and I'm like, oh, we should try and work on something. Or, you know what I mean? That, and I'm not even in a, like, I guess beyond May, I won't even have a job anymore. So yeah, I didn't have one before, but now, and I know a lot more stuff, but I don't have a space. That's been the issue. But I think hopefully, like, with, you know, maybe you as well, Phoebe, like, everyone that understands these kind of things, like, need to find yourselves in positions where you commission as well as make. I know that might be a pain in the ass for you, but, like, splitting some of your time away from your practice and... Oh yeah, oh yes, oh yeah, or making that as part of your practice, like in Graham they always say, oh, who did you bring through? Like I like this person because he all these artists came from him, or like I like this radio station because all these artists came from there, like, and that bit being like quite a, like the reason I'm here is because, you know, three or four artists that I work with became successful later on as well, do you know what I mean? And it's like, okay, I did something, and then like I used part of my money to spend whatever, £1,000 getting someone else's record out, and just hopefully that happening in the arts, like artists taking that on in institutions, that might be going on a bit, but at people that understand the culture and stuff, actually, yeah, taking up, like applying for jobs and shit, man, I think it's really important. Maybe not me, but like someone else.
I guess this applies slightly less to your question and thoughts as to what you were saying, but like when we had the open call, we purposely didn't look at people's CVs. Like, I guess Jamila and I are probably quite similar, but like we just opened up the email, got a vibe, maybe checked their link to the website, got a vibe and just went that way, you know. Mainly it was like there were no's because people were like not the, I don't know, not connecting. But like there was one person in particular who was just like just so wanted to come and just had all the enthusiasm. It was like, okay, like that's enough. I mean, obviously not all processes can be like that, but maybe the processes can contain some of that standpoint and energy of like openness to like, this person wants to be here, so come, you know.
Yeah, I think I'd is this still working? Yeah, I think I probably have a bit more of a literal take on what you were saying in terms of bodies in spaces. Like I was saying in my talk, like if you can't get out of bed, which I don't know what the answer is, but I'm just thinking about it a lot at the moment and thinking of other ways around it. Like I've decided I'm going to get people to FaceTime me into private views when I'm too ill to get out the house. Because I think in the art world as well, there is just so much pressure to be seen. And if you're in these positions where it is harder to be seen, or in my case, literally can't be physically present in the space, then you feel like you're losing out professionally as well as the experience of it and just wanting to the basicness of seeing the stuff. So yeah, I don't know. It's on my mind. Yeah.
I'm trying to keep it short though. No, I totally agree with you, and I think I'm constantly thinking about how we're constantly changing and whether we're losing integrity with the work that we're making by having to shift to certain spaces. And I'm kind of, I guess, interested in us building different infrastructure for us to show work that actually works for us, and so we don't have to compromise, because I think, yeah, that we shouldn't have to compromise on our work.
If clubs had art programs, then like we'd be able to, yeah, right?
Yeah, I was thinking like if people just change floors, one of the main issues of galleries is concrete floors, and it actually causes so much injury. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because like then I can't work and I'm in pain. So it's not just like it's like it does then start to move forward.
I had my knee strapped up the whole time Jamila and I were working on stuff on the concrete floor.
I feel like it's kind of galleries have become, or like the art world or art institutions is kind of, it's, and it feels kind of relatively new that there's like things like performance, like when I was studying my BA at Goldsmiths 15 years ago, like it was so uncool, like nobody was, like if people were doing it, it was like anything about the body, performance. And I think it's sort of relatively new that it, I think that it's, that these spaces are kind of accommodating this kind of work. And like we keep talking about interdisciplinary kind of practices, and there isn't that many other places that accommodate that in the same kind of way, I guess, and or allow.
I think it's totally, thank God the institutions or spaces are playing catch up rather than the other way around, right? that they're having to hopefully adapt because of the practice that's being made and the ideas that are being generated rather than the other way around, because that would be a horrible situation. Did you want to add something, John, or do we?
Just quickly, the kind of while institutions can try and play catch up and can try and be kind of informed by artists and led by artists as much as possible, it still makes sense for them to sort of play to their strengths in a way. So that's why you know, with Wising's location, it might not make sense to have a, say, like a weekly events program that was kind of showcasing the music that we were really interested in, because there would be, might be challenges of bringing in an audience that would or creating a context where a DJ set would make sense. But that is something that we can do on through a music festival, and so, or there are kind of other things we could do, which is kind of facilitating conversations, or kind of you know, like asking Women's Beat League to lead a retreat that kind of that was similar to the image that Elijah showed us. So their project was to kind of offer kind of lessons on CDJs for a week for eight women and non-binary people, and that's kind of something we can do using the space that we have. So while it's kind of, we would always kind of want to adapt, it's still sort of, there are things that we're better at, and other places would be better.
I sort of just, I want to thank everyone. Again, one of these moments where so many things have kind of resonated. But I think particularly acknowledging actually, I think the advancement within people's practice. I think a lot of the things, Elijah, you were saying about the need for things to kind of change, I think you're already kind of embodying through the way that you're creating structures, through these kind of collaborative structures. And it struck me, one of the underlying things that's very important about, I think, the way that, I don't know whether that's a generational shift or not, or whether maybe that's about connecting generations, but there is certainly this idea of kind of knowledge production, and that came up, and that sense in which I think people are sort of challenging orthodoxies, historical archives, institutional structures, through new knowledge production, or by reconfiguring or recalibrating existing centres of knowledge. And then also these forms of kind of knowledge distribution and dissemination. Mm-hmm. So finding new pathways of kind of connecting to kind of audiences. And I think it's just important that we recognise that you're doing that already, mm-hmm. despite the inadequacies of existing institutional structures, and for me there's really something interesting about Raji, you know, you work in and out of these things.
Yes.
That feels a really important strategy.
Yes.
That you're not completely subsumed within.
It's necessary for survival and healing,
yeah,
as well. Yeah.
But working both, I think, as a kind of strategy, feels also really important and really vital. Yeah. I think I'll just do lastly, so it's just a lot of comments, not questions really, but for me, there's a really interesting thing about a kind of intergenerational connection. Personally, I think as someone in their 40s, I feel like I've been in the middle, because I was taught by people like Sutcliffe Biswas, mm-hmm. and Keith Piper and Sonia Boyce, and that sort of previous generation. Again, I had that. This came up a lot of the time, this about an absence of kind of being connected to practices, or looking for practices that reflected one's own interests or identities. And again, as someone that's now teaching, that's still going on, mm-hmm. I think. But it feels to me that there is this now beginning kind of connection, I think, that's coming from maybe younger generation actively seeking out these previous histories. Yeah. And I think that's also a really important thing, because that's often how institutional power works, through canonical structures.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm. So that sense in which there is this history of practice that not validates, but that creates, that, you know, my work isn't just operating in a kind of vacuum. Mm. And I think that's really, really important moving forward, is that I think emerging younger artists recognise that they are part of, you're not just working in isolation. Mm. Despite the inadequacies of someone that works in an arts, we're still in that place where, you know, I'm encountering people that are saying, where are my peers, you know. Mm. But anyway, I just felt that was something that I think that has perhaps shifted, is that I think people are coming from this place where they feel they are increasingly more connected. Mm. And there are these histories that they're linked to. Sorry.
You know, I really agree. And the canaries that you were talking about, specifically the Canaries Project, when I first encountered that 2 years ago now, it completely changed my life. Like, And I wasn't even at that point experiencing any of the same things that, as directly in terms of my health, that Carolyn and others were talking about. But it completely shifted the way I was thinking, and that was through, I think, initially finding a text that they'd produced. And I live in New York, so they had been doing a residency at Recess. Because of the structure of Recess, which is a project space, I think it's called, in New York, where the space is given to a new group every month. And in terms of the form and structure of that, it's like it's open for the people to do whatever they need to do in there. It can be open to the public or it could be not open to the public. It's like it's like amorphous or whatever. Yeah, and the fact that that can then get to me and to you and to even more maybe directly help you, but yeah, it's those are some of the good things.
Anyone else want to add it?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I don't want to turn it into the debate that we've all heard and had about is social media good or bad, but there was another, let's not, but please. But there was a really interesting article in The Guardian, I think about a week ago, that was called Why Disabled People Can't Hashtag Delete Facebook, and it's because actually that's how a lot of people rely on reaching their communities. Mm. Yeah, and I was also just going to add that, yeah, like you were saying, the thing of where are my peers, and that's what I'm doing. I'm going, where are my peers? Actually, they're all around. I don't really even need to look. All I'm trying to do is remove the moment where us in our ill health are subsidising institutions' lack of access with the energy that we don't have and the health that we don't have. So going to do an event or a private view or something that you know will knock you out for the next week or so, that's just subsidising and you're paying the price at the end of that. So I suppose, and then you're kind of like pretending, you know, trying to come off as well, because if you don't, you fear that you won't be employed as an artist or art worker or in any employment, actually. So, but yeah, just kind of looking around me and going, okay, so we're doing this, let's not. And then when you take that away, if people feel able to, then there's so many of us there. Yeah,
I totally agree with you, Harold. And also, I think to make that link that it's really, that's come about from collectivity and having support networks and kind of making demands and taking up space and having entitlement and also politics of refusal to say, no, I'm not going to work under these conditions, you know, and I think that's important as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm really inspired by younger generations. I'm teaching at UAL now, and there's a lot happening around decolonizing the curriculum and students just putting petitions out and demanding for staff of colour, and you know, so I think, you know, that groundwork has been done over the years, and it's you know, we do see the changes and we don't see the changes. It's both, right? And everything's happening at the same time.
Are there any last questions or comments? John, do you want to any last comments or thoughts, or you?
No, not for me. Rather, just thanks to everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I think just to maybe end on that point, that this kind of, I think what you see in the show and what we've seen today now is this very, very complex negotiation between historical precedents, groundworks, examples, and very real negotiations of practice and working methodologies and all these sorts of things. And it's a really, yeah, really complex, a complex way of working, a complex way of practicing. And I just, yeah, again, to say a huge thank you to all of you for sharing that with us, and also to Wising to putting on the show and to opening this afternoon up. It's been wonderful. Thank you.